Welcome to the Hinckley Institute of Politics. My name is Lindsay Vickers, and I will be the host for today's Hinckley Forum. The Hinckley Institute of Politics was established in 1965 through the generous bequest of the Noble Foundation and Robert H. Hinckley. The Institute is dedicated to teaching students respect for practical politics and the principle of citizenship involvement in government. The Hinckley Institute offers paid internships to students of all majors here locally, in Washington, D.C., and in 55 countries around the globe. The Hinckley Institute also offers classes, the nation's only campaign management minor, week-long experiences to Washington, D.C., and over $70,000 in academic scholarships. We invite students to go next door or to our website, www.hinckley.utah.edu, for more information. The Hinckley Institute of Politics proudly presents the 17th Annual Rocco C. and Marion S. Siciliano Forum. This year's theme is the future of U.S.-Latin American relations. This is one of 21 events that will extend through next Monday. For a listing of all the events, we encourage you to pick up a brochure at the back of the room. The title of this morning's forum is The Future of Utah-Latin America Economic Development. Our guest today is Val Hale, the Executive Director of the Utah Governor's Office of Economic Development, GOED, which promotes state growth in business, tourism, and film. Hale was appointed to the position in 2014 by Governor Gary R. Herbert. Before accepting the position as executive director, Hale served for 2 years as president and CEO of the Utah Valley Chamber of Commerce, leading efforts in business community issues, including regional, economic development, and branding initiatives. Prior to serving in the chamber, Hale was vice president from 2010 through 2012 for university relations at Utah Valley University, UVU, overseeing legislative affairs, marketing and public media, and community relations. From 2006 through 2010, Hale worked as advancement vice president for the university. He was responsible for fundraising and all university external activities. During this time, Hale played a key role in transitioning Utah Valley State College into Utah Valley University. Hale started at UVU as the assistant vice president for external affairs from 2005 to 2006, where he served as legislative liaison and oversaw community relations and economic development activities. Before his career at UVU, Hale began working for the Brigham Young University BYU Athletic Department in 1982 and continued with the department for 22 years. He started as promotions and publications coordinator, working his way up in the department until his promotion to athletic director in 1999. Hale left a cherished legacy of the athletic department improvements. His success in fundraising resulted in the construction of Miller Park, the student athlete building, the indoor practice facility, and the legacy seats in the Lavelle Edwards Stadium. Hale received his bachelor's degree in public relations in 1981 and a master's degree in communications in 1987, both from BYU. Hale worked as a reporter at the Daily Herald from 1981 to 1982, covering business and government at BYU. Hale and his wife have 3 children and 10 grandchildren, and he currently resides in Orem, Utah. Please join me in welcoming our guest, Val Hale.
Thank you. Thank you, Lee. Really appreciate that introduction. And I want to acknowledge Sarah Adelman, my wonderful public relations person who helped prepare this presentation. This is really fun to be up here at the U and to be able to talk about Latin America and the economic opportunities that exist between that region and Utah. I love this room because I get to look at a couple of my favorite people. R.J. Snow used to be a boss of mine. He holds a rare distinction, believe it or not, of overseeing the athletic department at the University of Utah when he was a vice president and overseeing the athletic department at BYU when he was a vice president. So he oversaw the athletic departments of both institutions, which is kind of a rare thing. And then there's that heroic picture back there of Kirk Jowers, and he's looking very statuesque. And great man. I've really enjoyed getting to know Kirk since I came into this role. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about Latin America. It's a region that is very near and dear to my heart. I served for a couple of years as a missionary in Santiago, Chile, down in South America. And when I went to college in public relations, my goal was to work as a public relations practitioner for an international Fortune 500 company. That was my goal, and That's what I worked towards. I interviewed with Dow Chemical in their Latin American division, and was one of two finalists for a job. Turns out that the other finalist happened to be a native Panamanian who had a degree in public relations and a minor in chemistry, probably just a little better qualified than I was for the position, but she she got the job, and so I got distracted doing other things, and my career went this way. And then later Dow called me back and said, hey, we have a job for you in our Latin American division. Would you like it? And by that time, I was having too much fun doing what I was doing, and I said, no, thanks. But I often look back at that and think how different my life would have been had I accepted that job, headquartered out of Boca Raton, Florida, and spent much of my life in Latin America. Unfortunately, my Spanish is not quite as good as it used to be, but I occasionally have a chance to practice, and I love speaking Spanish and interacting with the Hispanic people whenever I can. So, you know, this is a great time in Utah to be talking about economic development and our economy. As you know, the accolades for our state have just come pouring in from all different directions over the last few years. We really have created a bit of a dynasty here in our state about, in the economic development area. Forbes magazine, for the last 5 years, has named us the top state for business and careers. Four out of the last 5 years. The Polina Corporation, number one pro-business state. Polina named our office one of the top 10 economic development offices. I spent the weekend in Washington, D.C. with Governor Herbert at the National Governors Association. And they had one session where they had all the governors sitting around in a square, and they were talking about their economic development challenges and successes. And it was really interesting to hear all of them joking about trying to catch Utah. How, you know, well, we don't have it quite as good as Utah, but we're doing pretty well. And, you know, just governor after governor going around the circle were acknowledging and commenting on the fact that Utah really is leading the pack. We're doing some things right. We're having some incredible success here in our state right now. And so it's fun to see how that then translates as we, you know, as we talk about global things. But here's some other things to consider as we talk. Utah's economy grew faster than all but six other states in 2012, and our GDP increased 3.4% versus the average of 2.5%. So, you know, here we are right here, out the economic outlook rankings, we're the best. We sometimes take for granted what's going on around us. We don't realize, until you talk to people at other states, we don't realize and appreciate all of the good things that are happening here. Here's another interesting statistic here. Unemployment rate. This is one of those good news, bad news things. We have 3.5%. We're the fourth lowest. And I would suspect when the latest statistics come out, you'll see us maybe move up, because I suspect North Dakota and South Dakota are going to drop a little bit with the oil prices and what's happening there. It's a great thing to be that have that unemployment that low, but it poses some challenges for people out there who are trying to hire people right now. This is also one of the most important things. We have a very diverse economy here. We aren't dependent on one thing. And I don't know if you saw the article in the New Yorker magazine a couple of weeks ago that talked about why Utah is the new Silicon Valley. And they talked about the diversity of our technology sector, not just IT, but advanced manufacturing, the various things that we do that are centered on technology in our state and all the industries, but there it's a diversity. We have mining, we have agriculture, we have technology, we have aerospace, we have, you know, it's just really an impressive thing right now in our state. Now, this is kind of interesting. And I'm getting to where, and this will all come into play here a little bit later as we transition to Latin America. But, you know, we have about 80,000 Utah work sites here in our state. We have about 62 companies that employ 1,000 workers or more. So 62 companies that are pretty big. But this right here is where our economy really ebbs and flows and succeeds or doesn't. We have 60,000 employers with less than 10 workers. And that small business sector really is what drives our economy. And it's what drives our exports and imports, and that's where I'll make the transition in a minute. But, you know, look at this. This is an interesting statistic, too. 80% of all jobs in this state are located within 50 miles of Salt Lake City. So we are, you can make a case that Utah is an urban state, or you can make a case that Utah is a rural state, however you want to say it. Our population and everything is very condensed along the Wasatch Front, and then we have a lot of open space and rural space afterwards. So, very unique state here. So let me just talk for a second about GOED now. Our vision in GOED, and this dovetails with the governor's vision, is that Utah will lead the nation as the best performing economy and be recognized as the premier global business environment and tourist destination. Now, we changed that when I came into office. There was one word that was different in there. Well, a couple of words, but it used to say be recognized as a premier global business and tourist destination, or business destination. I changed it to say the premier business environment and tourist destination. And I changed that because, you know, it's not a stretch to say we are the premier. There's not a better place in the world today to do business than Utah. And that's not a stretch at all. Our mission is to enhance quality of life by increasing Utah's revenue base and employment and improving employment opportunities. It's all about quality of life, right? If we don't have quality of life, then things get really bad. And we help improve quality of life by improving the revenue base and employment opportunities. And then this is a very critical part of our mission right here. This is where we're going to start transitioning. We attract new national and international investors and businesses while assisting the expansion of existing businesses. We have in our office the Office of International Trade and Diplomacy. So we do a lot of trade missions. This last year we went to Brazil, China, and Mexico. Some of those trade missions are with the governor accompanying us. Some of them are just with businesses where we try to help businesses go along and make introductions to businesses overseas. There are 188 foreign firms doing business here in Utah. $16.1 billion in exports. 61,000 jobs directly supported by exports. But I saw a figure the other day that's even more impressive, and it gives you an idea of how important international trade is to the state. There are actually over 300,000 jobs in this state that are indirectly tied to exports and international trade. 300,000 jobs. So it really reaches out into all aspects of our economy. You know, these 61,000 are supported directly by exports. So that's something that we work on. We have a program in our office, a federal program called STEP Grants, that if businesses are trying to increase their trade overseas, there are grants that are available to help them. They're available to help them go on some of these trade missions financially and otherwise. So if any of you know of businesses that are trying to ramp up internationally, they ought to contact our office and see about those STEP grants. One of the strategies that we have that I've talked about since I've been here, we have the ability and the power to convene. We have the governor's seal. This little seal right here carries a lot of weight in the state. And when the governor says, let's get together and talk, people come. And so we try to utilize that in our office. We try to have industry summits where we talk with people and businesses and get them together to talk about what are their challenges. We have business roundtables where we get CEOs with the governor about once a month, and CEOs will talk about various issues. The last one we had actually was about women executives and some of the challenges that they're facing in the state, and it was a very productive discussion. And then, of course, trade missions, where we get together businesses from our state who are interested in going to a certain part of the world. We have an upcoming trade mission. Let's see, we have one in April. I think it's to Japan. And we have, I think we have another, do we have another one to Mexico this year? I should know this. A trade mission? Well, European Union in June. I know that. And we're going to Hong Kong in the fall. But there's one other, anyway. I can't remember for sure. But that's one of the ways that we help. We have a number of partners in the state that we collaborate with, you can see. And one of our biggest partners is the World Trade Center, right up at the top. The World Trade Center, Derek Miller, who's the director of the World Trade Center, is right down the hall from me, probably 50 feet, his office. So we collaborate. We work very closely with them. They're the private nonprofit arm and they focus on helping companies export. And our main role is to work it with foreign direct investment, trying to attract foreign direct investment into the state. Okay, now we're going to start talking about some of the issues out there with our trade. We in Utah, you can take a look here, and this may or may not be surprising to you as you look at these numbers. So China and Hong Kong, 43% of our commodity exports. Now, Utah is kind of interesting. What do you think our main export is from Utah? What would you think? What product do we export most? Well, we actually do a lot of hay to China, but that's not number one. Number one, 51% of our exports are precious minerals. Gold, copper, that big pit up on the mountain there, that's our primary export. And the, you know, our exports went from $16 billion one year to like $12 billion the next, simply because the price of gold went down. So we export a lot of precious minerals. So a lot of times we take those out of the equation because it is such a big, big portion of our export, and we look at commodities. So China and Hong Kong, 43%. Latin America is 6%. So you see we have a lot of room to grow there. The United Kingdom, 8%. Canada, 8%. And the rest of the world, 35%. Today we're going to focus a little bit on that 6% and what's available there. compares favorably to Canada and the United Kingdom, who are also, you know, two of our top exporters. Here's another interesting statistic that shows the amount of exporting that we have. $900 million in Latin America is approximately what we've been exporting to Latin America, and we'll talk a lot of that is to Mexico that we'll talk about. We're going to really focus on three today that really are three of our biggest partners. Of course, Mexico is our biggest export partner and import partner in Latin America. Just had an interesting conversation that I didn't realize this. We exported last year about $500 million to Mexico. What I didn't realize is we imported, what was the number? $5
billion? $4.7 billion.
Yeah, almost $5 billion that we imported from Mexico. So they really like us. because we're importing a lot more than we're exporting. I mean, that's great news for them. That means we got to get on the stick and do a better job. And what do you think the biggest export to Mexico is? What's that? No, kind of. No, it is airbags, airbag parts. I just learned that from our representative here from Autoliv. It is the number one export into Mexico. And how much was that? How many auto parts do you guys put in down there?
We have sales there about $1.5 billion.
So they send the parts down to Mexico, and they're put together there, and they have, is it 11,000 employees in Mexico?
Right, just over 11,000.
Yeah. This is from Autoliv that's located up here in Ogden, and they put together these airbags. But who would have thunk airbag parts are our biggest exported good to Mexico? But that kind of shows you where our economy is going and what's driving it. So, you know, Brazil, you can see 13%. Brazil's a big country. It's we'll talk a little bit about Brazil here in a minute, but they've got some interesting challenges in that country that make it a little bit difficult. We're going to start out, though, talking about Peru. And there's my wonderful Chile there. I was in Washington, D.C., I mentioned, and while we were there, we met with representatives from the embassies, trade representatives of Mexico and Peru and Chile, and we talked a little bit about the TPP, Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement. That's a big deal that's going on right now in Washington, D.C., a big discussion. It's something that will help those countries as well as a lot of countries on the Pacific Rim, and it's a very, very hot topic of discussion right now in Washington, D.C. So Peru, you can see it's not at the top of our trading partners. It ranks 35th. But one of the things we've done well in Peru is we've worked with humanitarian efforts. There are quite a number of companies that or nonprofits, Eagle Condor Humanitarian, Chosky Humanitarian, the Hope Alliance, LDS Humanitarian Services, Cause for Hope, an organization that I've been part of. These organizations go down to Peru and try to help with their public health, their infrastructure development, poverty alleviation. One thing that's very encouraging is that Peru's economy is growing quickly and is becoming increasingly decentralized. It's had 6% economic growth in 2012 and 13. So it's a country on the move. It's headed the right direction. And they've got some great things going on there. As we met with their representative there, I was surprised at some of the technology and other things that they're starting to do there in that country. And it's great to see Peru. I went there first in 1978, and there was a lot of poverty. The day I was in Lima, there was rioting in the streets, and you know, it was a pretty bleak situation. It's nice to see that country is on the rise economically. David Utrilla is the honorary consul general to Peru, and he's here. He's head of the company, U.S. Translation Company. He helped form a trade mission to Peru that actually took more than 65 leaders from Utah to Peru, and that was the largest delegation that Peru had ever had come, largest business delegation. And the trade missions work. When when we took the trade mission to Mexico, our exports, increased by 50%? 50%. Our exports increased after that trade mission. So these trade missions are effective, and they also do good in terms of public relations and cooperation between the various countries. We signed an MOU while we were in Peru with the region of Piura, and that's focusing on education, sharing of technology, and furthering economic development. We also are looking in Peru, again, to medical devices, aerospace, infrastructure development. You know, they had catastrophic earthquake in 2007 in southern Peru, and that has really opened up a lot of opportunities in infrastructure development. Those Andes countries where they have frequent and very violent earthquakes, you know, we've been able, I think, to go down and help in some of the things that they do to build more sustainable, more rigid structures, things like aluminum-framed homes, large-scale structural reinforcement. It's really helpful because, as one who sat through many earthquakes in Chile and slept through many earthquakes, it's a pretty scary feeling down there when those hit. So, you know, this was an interesting thing where we started out in Peru helping as volunteers and as humanitarians, and it's transformed to where we're now following up with business opportunities that will benefit both the country and businesses. It'll help them, it'll help us. Now, let's go to Brazil. As we mentioned, our second largest trading partner, Brazil is a very modern country. When we were down on the trade mission in November, I was very impressed. Someone made the comment to me, though, that Brazil is the country of the future. And in 15 years, Brazil will be the country of the future. And in 30 years, Brazil will be the country of the future. They can't quite get beyond that label of the country of the future to the country of now. Part of the problem, as we talk to the people in Brazil, quite honestly, is they have a very anti-business government, basically. I talked to many businesses down there that said, we want to leave. You know, they'd just gone through the election, reelected by a very small majority, the president again, and there was a lot of pessimism at the time when we were there because the business people felt like they had kind of been abandoned. And it's a tough thing for them. They have a lot of resources. They have a lot of people. But they face the challenge. It's just difficult doing business in Brazil. And I think Dale, you were mentioning that your company experiences that, right? They told us they have 100% tariff on everything coming into the country. So if 100% on top of everything. So what happens is a lot of people in Brazil will fly up to the United States and buy iPhones, iPads, expensive items, and then they fly back to Brazil with these things and sell them there and make more than enough to pay for their trip because if people want to buy those in the stores, they pay twice what we pay here in America. And so they found, I guess they're allowed to bring like 3 suitcases of things with them when they come back to the country. So they go and they load up with things that they can take back and sell. So it makes for an interesting economy, and it's a tough place to do business. But they do have some of our leading exports to Brazil, and our advanced manufacturing products, industrial machinery, computers, optic and medical and surgery instruments, aircraft, spacecraft parts, vehicles, and, you know, their parts. It sounds like airbag parts, pretty big component. They import, we have plenty of opportunity to grow that market. If businesses will be patient and learn how to do it, then they can grow it. But, you know, there are success stories. Gary Neeleman is the honorary consul general of Brazil here, and the Neeleman name is just magic in Brazil. They love Gary Neeleman. He served his mission there. He worked there as a UPI reporter for years. And now his son, David Neeleman, who's standing there next to Gary, the founder of JetBlue Airlines here in the United States, has gone down to Brazil and founded Azul Airlines, Azul means blue, and it is the fastest growing airline in the world and has really taken off, pun intended, in Brazil. And he also told us when he was down there, very fascinating, this guy's a good business guy, He said, I came up to Utah and I saw the Vivint model, the model of Vivint with the home security system. And he said, we need home security in Brazil because crime's a little bit high. So he said, I just decided to copy the Vivint model. And so what he does, he goes out and hires all these Mormon missionaries, Brazilian Mormon missionaries that come home from their missions to go door to door. And he created a financing system where they could sell these door to door. And he said it's grown in 1 year to like the 10th largest company in Brazil. And he's just going great. So he's discovered how to do business in Brazil, and he's doing very well. Again, we had trade missions in 2013 and 14. We'd love to figure out a way to crack that nut, get into that country, because it does have tremendous potential. But now let's go to Mexico, our largest Latin American trading partner. I was impressed as we met with the gentleman from the embassy. We talked about opportunities. As I mentioned, $500 million in exports that we've given to Mexico, but we are a huge importer from Mexico as well. We have a great relationship with the country. Look at this number here. On any given day, $1.5 billion crosses the border between the U.S. and Mexico. $1.5 billion per day. And we did $500 million in exports last year to Brazil. We got to pick up our game a little bit, right? We need to do a little better job. And I guess you'd like us to keep buying a few more things from Mexico, right? So it's a great opportunity for us in Utah to look at this. In 2013, Mexico became Utah's eighth largest market for exports. They're our number one Latin American trade partner. We've seen a shift from exporting of raw materials to exporting more IT and manufacturing products, like airbag parts. Remember when I mentioned that Utah is a small business state? Well, Mexico, along with Canada, is the top export destination for U.S. small and medium-sized enterprises. More than 122,000 small businesses in America exported to Mexico. And that's a lot of businesses, small businesses. They represented more than 95% of U.S. exporters to NAFTA market. That information comes from the U.S. Chamber. And Mexico also became the number one source of imports for the state of Utah. So we've got a lot of room to grow. You know, Mexico, I think many of us have had this image of Mexico in our minds from years. And those of us old enough to remember the old movies of Mexico and things, those days are gone. It really is a vibrant country doing some great things: aerospace, medical equipment, life sciences, IT manufacturing. I've heard the word Mexico appear more and more over the years as we move forward with our imports and exports. We have an interesting Latin population here in the state. I've got some of that information here. It's a pretty strong relationship. Before I get to that, Christina Hernandez, GOED has a trade representative in Mexico, and I believe she's in Guadalajara. She works there to try to help businesses as doing both importing and exporting. We highlighted Mexico at our Utah Global Forum, and then the governor did the trade mission to Mexico as well. Look at this. This is interesting here in our Utah cities. We have a huge Hispanic population in our state. It's something, Pam Perlick, if you ever sit through one of her presentations, she will talk a lot about this. And you can see the numbers in blue there are the Hispanic population. And of that Hispanic population, the majority are from Mexico. 15% of the population of Utah in 2010 was Hispanic, and that made us the 12th largest Latino population in the country. So we have a lot of people here with some real ties and affinity to Mexico. So obviously they're interested in moving forward and doing work with Mexico. Mexicans represent the largest portion of Utah's Latinos, and Peruvians make up the fourth largest group. Get this, in between 2002 and 2007, before the economic crash, Latino-owned businesses increased by 78% to about 10,000 companies in the state. So by the year 2007, there were 10,000 Latino businesses here. Salt Lake City had the unique distinction recently of hosting the U.S. Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, which was a big deal. We hosted them in the Grand America Hotel. There were thousands of Hispanic business owners that came here and saw what we were doing here in Utah. Olga De La Cruz is the Utah Hispanic Chamber of Commerce president. She's noticed a couple of things. Most Latinos in Utah are looking for ways they can help their family members. They're just like the rest of us. They want to be able to start a business that can support their families. They want to send products back to their country. And that's one of the reasons they are so entrepreneurial. And additionally, increased access to the internet, text messaging, FaceTime, really gives them stronger ties with their families. I have a unique opportunity where once a month I go visit a family in our neighborhood. Neither the husband nor the wife speak English. They're both U.S. citizens. But he actually is now working in Mexico, doing construction in Mexico. He's an architect. And so we go and visit once a month. And when he's not home, his wife talks about how she FaceTimes with him, you know, daily, just like the rest of us do with our, you know, our kids and grandkids. And it really has made that, you know, people who work there or here and live here or there, it makes that communication, it makes it a lot easier to do. And so consequently, we may see more of that going forward. So some pretty interesting comments there. We have a lot of cultural ties, a lot of community assets, one of the things that I told the folks when we were meeting with them in Washington, D.C. that surprised so many of them is the great language capability we have here in Utah. For businesses interested in crossing borders, we speak 120 languages here in Utah fluently. And when you need somebody to speak and interact internationally, we do that really well here in Utah. How many in this room speak Spanish fluently? Okay, take a look around. It's a pretty good group. And I could walk down the street in my neighborhood and probably half the homes, somebody speaks Spanish fluently in those homes. And not only that, just as important as speaking the language, they understand the culture. Sometimes the real barriers are not language barriers, they're cultural barriers. And so that's something that I think we undersell here in Utah. We can do a better job. And when I tell these people, you know, we met with Japan, and I told them, I said, you know, again, on my street, I know three people who speak Japanese fluently. And they understand your culture. And, you know, in Utah, probably thousands of people who speak fluent Japanese. Where else will they find that? And same thing when we were in Brazil, we told the Brazilians, we have 30,000 fluent Portuguese speakers in Utah. That's not counting the Brazilian people who live here. And they were just kind of like, oh, wow, that's amazing. But that's Utah. We take it for granted. Other people look at it and they go, wow, that's pretty remarkable. So anyway, the future looks really bright. I've got time to answer some questions. And if I don't know the answer, then I'm going to defer to Kirk, and he's going to answer them. But we were admiring your heroic-sized portrait back there before you came in. Yes. But it's I think the future with our trade relations with Latin America, I think the future looks very bright. If we can get the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership passed, and some of the other obstacles that we have and some of these free trade agreements, I think you're going to see things really skyrocket. And as technology continues to increase in these countries and they have access to some of these, the great computer and IT and other other things, it will just open doors to them that haven't been there before. So let's open it to questions. Anybody have questions?
So if you have a question, please state your name and a little bit about yourself and speak clearly into the microphone.
Hi, good morning. I'm JR, and I'm a clinical psychology. I have a clinical psychology degree by diploma, and I've been attending these forums here, and they're extremely educational. Thank you for coming. I don't think I have a question as of now, but I have an acknowledgement to you. I have a very big thank you to you because you don't compare yourself as a different from the Latino population. As I hear you speaking, it seems to me like you consider yourself one of them because you open yourself to contact them and talk to them and embrace their approach. I was born in Brazil. I speak Portuguese, English, and Spanish now. And I'm really thankful that people like you are courageous enough to embrace the difference instead of pushing it away. Because I have participated in some conferences that I can see clearly that some people really want to consider others as much different of them that they can, to push them away. And so this is not a progressive approach when you push people away from you. And I thank you very much. Please do more, because this is very important for us. Thank you.
Thank you. Soy Latino. I love the Latin people. I always have. And I think the more we embrace them and their culture, and I think it's just going to open a lot of doors for us. Other questions? Other observations? You who do business here, you'd love to hear your comments too.
Hi, my name is Molly, and I actually work at the Hinckley. I was wondering if you would speak to some of the concerns that are out there about the TPP. I know that there's a lot of sentiment against it.
Well, I'm not an expert on that, but you know, there are always concerns about free trade. You know, we have our standards here in America. I know that there's a lot of concern about agriculture and what standards we have and whether we're going to make them, you know, have the same standards. Free trade just, it boils down to what we like versus what they like and whether we can come to an agreement that we're going to, you know, agree that we're going to have the same standards. And my understanding of it is that's really kind of the fundamental challenge through the whole thing. And somebody who understands TPP better may want to speak to that. I don't know. Anybody here who's an expert on that?
No expert.
Go ahead.
Well, the economies of...
Not an expert, but the economies of Mexico... Well, I'm Eduardo Arnal. I'm the consul of Mexico here in Salt Lake City. And the Mexico, Colombia, Peru, and Chile economies are quite similar in the way that they are expanding, opening. It's exactly the opposite that the path that Argentina, Bolivia, Venezuela are taking. That is a more protective economies from the government. This is more open markets. And the idea is to work together in order to compete, especially with the Asian markets. So for U.S., will be, in my opinion, not only good, will be necessary to be part of this alliance. Just look at, we can see a sample with NAFTA. We have a complementary economies. Mexico and Canada, we have the natural resources, U.S. the capital, and we have the labor. Without the Mexican labor, will be impossible for this country to compete with China, for example. As same as for us, will be impossible without the American capital. So we need each other, and we have the complementary economies. So in the case of TPP, it's the largest picture, because in Asia, they are doing some alliances, and they are working, and China will be soon the largest economy worldwide. And the point is, there's one interesting fact. China is the second largest trade partner of U.S. worldwide. But it's just because China is selling you more products. Mexico is the second, is the third, but it's the second largest market for the American products worldwide, just behind Canada. Last year, Mexico bought American products more than Italy, France, Germany, UK, Spain, Netherlands, and Czech Republic combined. More than China, Indonesia, and Australia together. China, Japan, Indonesia, and Australia together. More than all the Latin American countries. So, looks clearly, and just one fact, we are 35, there's only 35 million Mexicans that they can afford American products. It's quite a similar to the population of Canada, but we are 120 million. Just wait. No? And it's only time that so far we will be the largest market for American products. And as in the TPP, you can expand that twice with the other countries. So there's no any risk, I guess, for U.S. It's exactly the opposite. I mean, it's a great opportunity. And the last fact, your port in the Pacific Ocean, you do not have more room to expand. I mean, physically speaking, there's no more room in the coast. And right now, the union, they were on a strike.
Strike, yeah.
So they were looking for Mexican ports in order to enter. Actually, we have a project that we call Punta Colonel, and the idea is to develop a port southern Ensenada that will be larger than L.A. Will be the second largest port in the world, just behind Shanghai, when they end their expansion in 2018. Why? Because you can go through Mexico much more cheaper. You will have your products by road or rail to San Diego or the border in less than 60 miles. So make all the sense because you do not have more room. Sorry.
Yeah, that's great. We're fortunate. I guess I don't need that. We're fortunate. Senator Hatch, excuse me, has been very diligent in working to get this TPP passed. And the TTIP, these are things that I think we can reach, hopefully, a consensus on in Washington. There's some things that we can maybe actually get something done. So I don't know, Kirk, what you're hearing, but it's a big deal on these for international trade. Other questions? Yeah, or comments? Yeah, right here. Dale.
Hi, I'm Dale Cook from Auto Leave, and we've had some great success economic development between Utah and Mexico, where we have our sales are pretty equal between Utah, about close to $1.5 billion here with our plants in Utah, and that's about what we have in sales in Mexico. And so we're seeing a lot of opportunities to strengthen that relationship. And since this is about economic development growth in the future, I think one of the areas is education and educating the workforce there, and maybe partnerships with the universities here in Utah. We talked about that on the trade mission. I just wanted to see if you had some comments on that. We have a rigorous training program within our company. We tend to see more turnover. If we could have some more partnerships early on with the universities, I think that would help us, especially with our management and things down there.
Yeah. So you're referring to I keep forgetting I already have a mic. You are referring to education partnerships with Mexico?
Yeah.
Well, I think there's no doubt that the key to any country improving economically and in its business is to improve the educational opportunities. My guess is, and I'm just guessing, that in Mexico, you know, the pursuit of higher ed isn't quite what it is here, and so the more we can do to establish those partnerships, get people to come here or get people to go there, is going to really really help both economies. As you know, workforce development right now is our number one challenge here. And it's probably the same down there with your plants in Mexico. The more we can do to promote education across the borders or even in our own areas, it's just going to help the economy. It can't help, can't do anything but help it. And especially, I would think, in Mexico, where it's probably not as much of a tradition to go to higher ed, go to college, graduate. You had a question.
Yes, my name is Josh Lee. I'm with a company called Epic Global Corp. Went to the Brazil trade mission, and that is a tough nut to crack. So I think we're almost there, though. my question for Mexico, though, is I heard that they were graduating more engineers per year than the U.S. was. So I mean, they're on the rise because we're looking at doing some manufacturing, having some of our parts manufactured in Mexico here soon. So I
can't I'd love to hear that. Yeah,
go welcome. Ahead. No, Jazz, it's true. We're getting more engineers than U.S. and many European countries so far. And the reason, first of all, is we became the sixth largest producer of cars, vehicles, worldwide. And we are really close to be the fifth soon. Second, we have the seventh largest aerospace industry in the world. And that is really amazing if you think that 20 years ago, obviously, that was not the case. And there's many that kind of industries that are expanding dramatically in Mexico. And additionally, the NAFTA, every single day will be much more easier to do business in Mexico. President Calderon, he started, it was really fun and intelligent thing. He did a national, I'm looking for the word even in Spanish, una concurso, no? Contest? Competition?
Yeah.
A national competition, thank you. A national competition and a really good prize in order to looking for the most unuseful, inútil, tramit in the bureaucracy. And they were the people who could participate, no, just reporting which was the most unuseful tramit in the government, no? And the finalists were like a 300. Finally, they were like the first, the second, or the third place in that concurso? Competition. But, thank you. The point is, the idea about that was to eliminate those tramits. So once the competition ends, the government eliminate those 300 tramits that before you had to go. I mean, in order to put a plan or do business in Mexico, maybe 15 or 20 years ago, you had to go through 20 steps or 30 steps or 50 steps. Right now, you only have to go like for 15 or 20. I mean, it's almost the half. And also, many companies are established in Mexico because of that. And we, obviously, are putting more universities and more technical careers and in order to fulfill the necessities of those companies. So it's easier, it's faster, it's cheaper. And additionally, because we are neighbors, we are the only country, well, in Canada, but we are the only country who have the really advantages to move our cargo by road to U.S., that is faster, you don't have to wait for the ports, no, and make many, many advantages, I guess. Thank you.
Great, thank you. So I want to finish up just talking a little bit about Chile, which since I'm half Chilean, at least I'd like to say I am, by the way. You know, I was in Chile in 1976 to 78. They had just undergone a coup in 73. They had overthrown Salvador Allende. Augusto Pinochet was the president. He came in and created a free market economy. And so when I was down there, the economy, you know, the country was doing okay. But when I went back in 2006, I was totally shocked. It was absolutely amazing to see what had happened in that country. The freeways, in parts of Santiago. I would have sworn I was in any American city. It was went to these malls that had all of the, you know, the same chain restaurants we have here, and it was like I was, whoa, what happened here over the last 30 years in this country? You know, they've become a great market as well, and have done tremendous things. In the morning when I'm eating my grapes, chances are they were, you know, in from Chile or something. They've done some great things with produce. I think we had one last question, then we're going to wrap it up. Are we about done? One quick question? Okay.
Hi, I'm Gustavo from Salemundo, Utah, the Spanish broadcaster. And, I went in a school in Mexico. I was raised in Mexico. So I know many people there think the NAFTA is unfair for Mexico because they think USA get more benefits than Mexico from the NAFTA. What do you think is that?
You know, I'm not positive. So people think it's more unfair for Mexico than it is for the United States. I don't know. I'm not sure why they would think that, unless maybe they think that it's just that Americans are exploiting the Mexican people. I don't know. I would suspect it's a good thing, or it would have probably been rescinded by
now. Well, it has been a really good thing. The problem is, if
go ahead.
Turn off the cameras and the record. Apaga la cámara, por favor. The fact is, in this relationship, we are David and Goliath. You can guess who is David and who is Goliath. And even that we are not as strong and as big as economy, obviously, as the largest economy worldwide in the U.S., we want to compete. There are some fields that we couldn't compete. Once the NAFTA starts, we only have one company. I will put you one example. One company that they did really Mexican brand TV. No? They only. We only had one, little one, that they made Mexican brand TVs. As you know, the color TV was invented and patented by a Mexican. So we had one TV. Obviously, they couldn't compete with the largest American and Japanese companies when NAFTA opens, and they go to bankrupt. But we have another field that we can compete. And I will put you just one example. And I was in those negotiations when I was a federal congressman in Mexico. Results that one of those is the tuna fish. As you know, the tuna fish born in front of the coast of Peru. They, during their lives, they're swimming to the north, and for some reason that I don't know, they turn left in Mexico. So in order to catch the tuna fish, the only that we have to do is put our nets and wait. No? We cannot catch all the tuna fish, but we can catch the best ones and the largest one. Behind of us in deep waters are the Japanese, Americans, everybody waiting for the tuna fish that we couldn't catch. And obviously for us it's much cheaper, no? It's faster, and it's exactly the same fish, okay? So we were trying to sell the tuna fish to U.S. They say no. Why? We had to go to fight in a trial against them under NAFTA. After 10 years fighting, we won. 10 years. Because obviously they were trying to protect the producers of tuna fish of California. So when we won, they said, okay, you won. You will be able to sell your tuna fish in the U.S. But I must be sure that you are not killing dolphins. Okay, we do not kill dolphins. I mean, no, but you need a stamp that is dolphin-free. Okay, there's no problem. I mean, where can we get the certification and prove you that we are not killing dolphins? Who will give me the certification? I give the certification. Can I get the certification? No. Why not? Because I don't want. So we had to create our own stamp that is Amigo del Delfín, dolphin friend. Okay. We got the certification, European Union. And after that, we will be able to sell the tuna fish in the U.S. The result is the 80% of the tuna fish that you eat in this country right now, even if it's an American brand, is Mexican. Will be cheaper for the customers. They get more profits. And the only result is most of the fleet they sent to Alaska to catch crab, and they did even a TV show or something, I don't know. And it was a win-win relationship. But that's why there's a perception in Mexico, because it's not easy to compete with the largest economy in the world. And I can put you examples in many other fields that we can compete so far. And avocados transportation, poof, it's a great story. But it's not easy, you know. It's not easy, but absolutely has been a really win-win relation for both, and for sure for Mexico. Since NAFTA, right now we have transnational companies that they are expanding huge and amazingly in the United States. Just, I will put you an example. Most of the bread that you eat daily basis in this state is Mexican. If it's made by Sara Lee or Wheat, all of them are owned by Bimbo Bakery. That is the largest bakery worldwide. Most of the glass that you use in your constructions coming from a Mexican company, this Vitro, that owns Anchor Glass. Most of the cement that you use or concrete that you use to build your roads coming from Cemex, that owns more than four American companies. So there's many Mexican transnationals that they are expanding in U.S. right now drastically since NAFTA, and that was not happened before. So, and I guess even that was not been easy, yes, has been a really useful and good for us. Our economy has been expanding in the last 12 years, just until last year, but between 3.5 and 5% yearly. And our inflation rate was the second lowest in America, just behind Canada. It was lower even than U.S. So I think that has been a good thing, hard but good. Sorry.
Thank you very much. I think our time is up. Thank you for coming. Let's go do some business with Latin America.